Sonia Qadir, who is a Pakistani socialist feminist. And welcome to the show, Sonia. Can you hear us all right?
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me.
We hope listeners can hear Sonia as well. We've sort of put her through a different kind of microphone today. So just to start off, Sonia, we just kind of wanted to know a bit about what's happening. Oh, sorry. I hadn't switched someone else's mic on. We just wanted to... Oh, so now her mic is switched on. Pardon me. Sorry, Sonia. No one could hear you up till now. So now we've got... Now listeners can actually hear you. Maybe we'll just start the interview by telling us about some of the main issues the manifestos are raising and some of the demands of the women's marches that are taking place across Pakistan now and over the last few years.
Yes, definitely. So these marches, which we call the Aurat marches, the women's marches, they started about 5 or 6 years ago, and they started from the big cities, Lahore and Karachi, but they've spread to many other cities now. And I think one of the key questions or the starting points of these marches was the demands around women's bodily autonomy and against sexual violence, as well as women's right to occupy public space, which is a huge issue in Pakistan. But all of these questions already led to a lot of backlash from right-wing elements. Specifically, there was a huge controversy around placards in the very initial marches that said this one particular phrase, which was "Mera jism, meri marzi," and that translates to "My body, my right." Feminists, like to their credit, to a lot of the organizers, have really sort of persisted and sort of been able to sort of, you know, gain back space to be able to continue using this this phrase, and it's really become kind of like a slogan now. And I think the feminist movement in Pakistan is in some ways really identified with this particular slogan over the years. But the demands have also changed, evolved, and increased, and they've included a lot of other things. For instance, issues related to housing rights, especially for people who live in squatter settlements and have very insecure rights to housing. The issues related to climate change, which really, really affect Pakistan, as we saw in the floods that happened in 2022, environmental pollution. Some of Pakistan's largest cities, including Lahore, is like now the most polluted city in the world. And also questions around how Pakistan is held hostage to the diktats of international organizations like the International Monetary Fund that is imposing austerity on Pakistan, including obviously other global South countries. This year, a lot of the manifestos of the various marches, one of the common themes there is the question about the safeguard to democracy, because we've just had elections that were rigged and have generated a lot of controversy in the country. But also the marches are asking for the rights of marginalized communities and ethnic communities, specifically in Pakistan, to be safe from state violence, to be able to have autonomy, and also to have full rights to political participation in every political process, right? And so the interesting thing, one of the things that you can notice is that a lot of both the manifestos and the artwork itself is really speaking to this question of politics. And they're also expressing solidarity with Palestinian women. So a lot of the women in these posters are wearing keffiyehs. And because obviously Palestinians are fighting for an end to occupation, 75 plus year occupation. And they're also showing solidarity with Baloch women. So the women are wearing keffiyehs and they're wearing Baloch dresses. And because the Baloch women, again, also have been dealing with state oppression for since Pakistan's creation, but of late they've been leading a movement to end what they call an end to Baloch genocide, which the Pakistani state is enacting. And one of the things around it is that there's been a lot of enforced disappearances and targeted killings of Baloch men, Pakistan's really powerful military and other state institutions. So these are all really center stage in this year's marches.
Can I ask a little follow-up question, Sonia? My name's Sue Bolton. I met you many years ago when you came to conferences of social science in Australia. But a lot of listeners wouldn't really know a lot about Balochistan and oppression of Baloch people. And also, I know as part of the Women Life Freedom Movement in Iran, one of the places, as well as the Kurdish areas being particularly heavily repressed, the Baloch part of Iran, the people in Balochistan were very strong in that movement and were also heavily repressed. So I was just wondering if you can give us a little background about the occupation of Balochistan and that whole struggle, just a little bit to give listeners an idea.
Yes, absolutely. So Balochistan is part of, so it's like the biggest province in terms of area of Pakistan, and it has had problems with from the very beginning, so from independence, because you see whatever becomes Pakistan and India, these are a lot of different regions which had different kind of relationships with the British colonial state. A large part of what became Balochistan was an independent princely state, and there were issues around whether it wanted to concede to Pakistan or not, and there have been armed struggle in some part of that region from the very beginning. Over the years, there's been different kinds of attempts at, you know, coming to some sort of political solutions, but the problem is that instead of really fully prioritizing political solutions, the Pakistani state has used violence against them time and again. And since the Musharraf's time in the 2000s, and because also this is the time when the war on terror started and Pakistan was sort of fully integrated into that sort of into that space, Pakistan has really started using enforced disappearances without any sort of accountability. And the biggest, the place where this is being used in other parts of Pakistan as well, but specifically Balochistan gets the brunt of it. So they have kidnapped, killed, and forcibly disappeared almost a whole generation of young Baloch men. And this is not just people who were part of the armed struggle, which is also happening there, but these are also just young students who are, you know, just interested in having some sort of a political dialogue and thinking about their own autonomy and their relationship and what kind of rights do they have in the Pakistani state. So this has become it's been getting worse and worse and worse, and now there are this big movement that is being led by Baloch women specifically, also because most of the men are either in jail or disappeared or been killed. So we're seeing Baloch women come out to Pakistan's big cities and Pakistan's capital. They had a huge sit-in for a few weeks. They were sitting in Islamabad demanding rights. They did not really get any good response from the state, but they've been able to sort of, make connections with the rest of the Pakistani society and a lot of young people from other parts of Pakistan, including the big cities, including feminists, are now increasingly aware of and interested in solidarity with the Baloch women.
No, thanks for that, Sonia. Just maybe a follow-up question. Well, actually, not so much about the Baloch struggle, but I actually think listeners might be interested to do a bit of Googling about the Baloch struggle, because it is important, but it really gets zero coverage in Australia. So that's why I thought it was really good that you were able to talk about that. Maybe just something else which the organisation you're part of, the Feminist Collective, did was to write an open letter to the Karachi Literature Festival about inviting a Zionist to their annual event. I was just wondering if you can talk about that and who the Zionist is that they've invited.
Yes, so this happened in February. The Karachi Literature Festival is one of the big festivals in Pakistan. It's been going on, I think this was the 15th year that they were organizing something. And they invited up someone who's a German writer. Her name is Ronja Ottmann, and I think she was actually a guest of the Goethe Institute, who is obviously in a lot of the global south countries. These institutes invite have a big role to play in our cultural spaces. So this woman has taken a lot of Zionist positions. She's written articles and been part of panel discussions in German media that make really a lot of racist commentary about Palestinians in Germany, as well as the larger Muslim community and anyone who is pro-Palestinian. So because of some of that history of her, of what she stands for, the group that I'm part of, the Feminist Collective, we wrote an open letter to KLF, the Karachi Literature Festival, asking them to cancel her event and to make sure that it is the voices of the Palestinians who are centered in our literary and intellectual spaces, specifically because, you know, there's very little space that's given to Palestinians in generally, in especially in the global north. So when we have you know, platforms that we can create, it's really important that Palestinians feel are given a safe space to be there and to talk about their issues. And specifically also, and we mentioned in the letter that, you know, this genocide has now been going on for over 6 months, and it's really disingenuous at this time to claim neutrality and say that this is just, you know, different viewpoints that we should all be discussing. And also, we talk about the fact that this was, in fact, a betrayal of the values of Pakistani intellectuals, activists, poets, writers, who have a huge history, not only of standing with Palestinians, but also with oppressed people within Pakistan and in other spaces. So this letter, it generated a lot of interest, and it had many intellectuals, scholars, artists, writers, etc. They signed it. Over almost about 500 people signed the letter, and it also got covered in Pakistani media a great deal as well. So this led to obviously Ronja herself making statements on her social media, as well as a lot of German media talking about it, and including there were statements by Penn Institute in Berlin and the German consulate in Pakistan, as well as others who really took it up and seemed very, like, there was a huge backlash from them. And they really made false accusations about anti-Semitism, decried that this is a cancel culture. And in fact, some of the commentary has been outright racist. It's really talked about Pakistan as being a really dangerous place, full of Islamists. Even Pakistani intellectuals are not interested in different opinions. And also that, you know, we were threatening Ronja, even though the claim that we made was that we're only speaking to KLF, and that we might boycott the festival if the talk goes ahead. But in fact, they did end up canceling it, although they did not make a public statement about it. So they just canceled it, but did not say that why they canceled it, for instance. So, but I think the media response that we're seeing from Germany, it's very consistent with the positions that are being taken in Germany, and it's not being really called out by people across the globe. So, for instance, there is now a campaign called Strike Germany, which is really sort of trying to has gathered a lot of momentum to make a cultural boycott of German institutions because they are so complicit in what is happening in Palestine, and as well as, like, for instance, we see Namibia now taking Germany to the ICJ for its complicity in Israel's genocide of Palestinians.
Thanks, Sonia. It's Mary here. I just wanted to ask you a final different question. Can you talk about the Pakistani transgender rights movement, please?
Yes. So the transgender rights movement too, so the transgender community in Pakistan is a very historic community. So in South Asia, transgender community has always existed, has always been very, very visible. So in pre-colonial times, before the British arrival, they had a huge, like a big status in South Asia. But that, because of colonial law, they were sort of criminalized and sort of sidelined and impoverished. Today in Pakistan, we call them Khawaja Siras. And so in fact, in around 2017-18, it is the group that I organized, the Feminist Collective, group we were just talking about, and we were involved with helping draft a law that for the rights of transgender community. And in 2018, this law was passed. It's called the Protection of Transgender Persons Act. And it was one of the most progressive acts, in fact, in the world, because it really it allowed people to so basically it said that gender identity is based on someone's self-perceived identity, and that there would be no invasive medical testing to sort of, you know, tell someone what gender that they belong to. And it obviously also had a lot of sort of safeguards for transgender people, for their education, for sort of their rights to property, etc., etc. But in fact, there was a sustained campaign against it over the next few years, and it's been led by some of the people from this one particular religious party, but also interestingly has been supported and like in on social media has been led by a group of people, specifically a very elite fashion designer. And it really does sound like some of the anti-trans rhetoric that is going on in the global north, specifically America and other places, is probably also affecting some of this discourse in especially elite spaces in Pakistan as well. So this, because of this campaign, this case was ended up the law was taken to court so that it can be declared as un-Islamic, and eventually, yes, Islamic constitutional courts ended up declaring it un-Islamic. But the community, like feminists, trans people, are still in fight with it. We haven't given up, and we are now appealing that case.